Today, I'm going to talk about a case from the Blue Cliff Record, which was compiled 11th, 12th century in China, of interactions between Chan students and teachers, Chan students, Chan being the Chinese word that is translated as Zen. So this is case 89, which some of you will be familiar with. Yunyan asked Dawu, how does the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara use those many hands and eyes? Dawu answered, it's like someone in the middle of the night reaching behind her head for the pillow. Yunyan said, I understand. Dawu asked, how do you understand? Yunyan said, all over the body are hands and eyes. Dawu said, that's very well expressed, but it's only 80% of the answer. Yunyan said, how would you say it, elder brother? Dawu said, throughout the body are hands and eyes. So Dawu and Yunyan, they have the same teacher. They both became famous. Dawu is the older brother, and he, in this exchange, is deeper. Brother, not in the blood sense, but in the lineage sense. They were both in the same lineage, and they have the same teacher. So those of you who have been either gone through ordination or gone through initiation, there's a lineage paper that shows your connection, the people that you got initiated with, or your brothers and sisters, technically. And there's your teacher and your teacher's teacher. And this supposedly goes back to the time of Buddha, but we know that it was made up in about the 9th century, because that's when the Chan school was trying to establish itself. So it made it up. But it's been pretty routine since the 9th century. So one more time. So the story has three main characters: Dawu, the older brother, Yunyan, and Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva. One more time. Yunyan asked Dawu, how does the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara use those many hands and eyes? Dawu answered, it's like someone in the middle of the night reaching behind her head for the pillow. Yunyan said, I understand. Dawu asked, how do you understand? Yunyan said, all over the body are hands and eyes. That's very well expressed, said Dawu, but it's only 80%. Yunyan said, how would you say it, elder brother? Dawu said, throughout the body are hands and eyes. So the third character in here is Avalokiteshvara, whom I was just talked about a couple of Dharma talks ago. Avalokiteshvara, Guanyin in China, Kanon in Japan, probably the most popular Bodhisattva in all of Asia, the Bodhisattva of compassion, who reaches out and touches everywhere. So what about Dawu and Yunyan? Well, we can speculate that Dawu has allowed the teaching to fully penetrate him, and that he's able to act from the still mind, from the heart mind, rather than just ego. He gets that Avalokiteshvara's eyes are not just all over the eyes and then all over the body. They are the body itself. So the last couple of talks I've been talking about heart-mind, citta in Sanskrit, shin in Sino-Japanese, trust in heart-mind from the third ancestor, a long prose poem, big mind, that's Suzuki Roshi's expression, Buddha nature, that's the common expression. So what about it? I said this last time, but I'm going to go over this again. Heart-mind, in contrast to ego, doesn't have a revved-up narrative, isn't just caught by remembering, regretting, and rehearsing on and on with thousands of opinions based on thousands of fears. Heart mind doesn't have waves of emotion, crescendos of emotion, anger, euphoria, embarrassment. Heart mind doesn't worry about being left out, rejected, not fitting in. Instead, heart mind rests in a don't know space with a felt sense and sometimes dim images, a few words, often not enough for the ego operating system. But if the ego operating system calms down, it's plenty. It's plenty calling us to be who we are, always calling us to be who we are. So Dawu is acting compassionately from the depth, from heart mind, rather than just from his understanding. Understanding is important too, though. We have to balance our ego operating system. It's as important as heart mind. So let's not put Yunyan down. We're always looking for the winner and the loser in these. But this is not about winners and losers, even though it seems like it. Yunyan's 80% is good. That's wonderful. So I'm going to give an example of heart mind from my experience with my teacher. Maybe I'll give a couple. So years ago, more than 50 years ago, we were going to go to this art museum in San Francisco where I lived, and going to hear a talk that my teacher really wanted to go to. And my roommate was going to go with us. But she was really suffering from depression. So she didn't have the energy to go, so she backed out at the last minute. And then we went to the talk, and my teacher, Shinryu Suzuki Sensei, was sitting next to me. But just before the talk began, he got up and went out of the room. And then he came back when it ended, at the end. And I said, "Sensei, you missed the talk." He said, "I know. I was in the gift shop picking out a card for Rhonda." Heart mind. Second example from my teacher when I lived at the Zen monastery in California. There was a guy named Howard who was always late for meditation. Sometimes he didn't show up at all. And two or three times he was caught smoking dope behind the shower, behind the hot baths. Favorite activity in those days. Maybe even in these days. I wouldn't know, but in those days, a favorite activity. And the Eno, that's the guy in charge or woman in charge, and this time it was a guy, went to Suzuki and said, "It's time to kick Howard out. You know, he's just disturbing everything." And Suzuki said, "Well, Howard has a very good heart and a deep desire to learn our way. I'm going to make him my attendant." This is true. So he made Howard his attendant. And the attendant in the monastery is really stays close to the teacher, helps the teacher with all the rituals, follows the teacher in and out of the zendo. He helps the teacher with cleaning. And Howard, after a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years, he became ordained. He became one of the most well-respected disciples of my teacher. Avalokiteshvara, heart mind. Now I'm going to try to show a picture. I showed one last time of Avalokiteshvara, but I had to stumble around. Let's see if I have to stumble around this time. I'll try to show a picture. Oh, there it is. This is a different picture than the... Oh, where'd it go? Huh. Well, I saw it. Let's see. Well, I can see it on my screen. I'm not so good at this. Well, I guess I'm not going to show it. There you go. Anyway, there are lots of pictures of, it still wants me to do it. So.
Hey, Tim?
Yeah?
You want to stop sharing? You're sharing the wrong screen.
All right.
Click share again, and it'll give you some choices as to which screen to share.
I've got you guys' pictures back.
Right. So go back to that screen and click the share button.
Okay.
And it'll give you several boxes to choose from.
Yeah.
Pick the one that has your picture on it. And then,
then I want to share. Okay.
Oh.
Didn't come up.
Still the wrong one.
Maybe it's going to come up. Maybe it's down here. Oh, here it is. It's, I don't know.
There
okay,
you go.
Here's Avalokiteshvara, you guys. Let's see. And we're starting at the top, and then we're moving along so that we can see her in her, maybe not her entirety, but most of her. Her and him. Sometimes a her, sometimes a him. There she is, with her heads, with her arms, with her eyes. You can see that, right? Okay. So, my teacher was giving a talk one time at the Zen monastery, and he was talking about within one there are many. And in those days, we didn't have electricity in the Zendo, so we only had the light on his face and our small lanterns, shadows. It was pretty wonderful, coming and going as he gestured and moved his arms and his hands and his legs. And in the morning, my friends and I often would say, was that Suzuki the man talking last night, or was that Suzuki the woman, or both? This is Avalokiteshvara. Face and countenance different according to the different circumstances, sometimes soft, pliable, emanating love, sometimes steely and even fierce in affect and emotions. Within one, there are many. Within many, there are one. So supposedly, Avalokiteshvara looks down in suffering, and when she does, her head bursts from pain. And then Buddha puts her head back together. She grows 9 new heads, as well as growing 1,000 arms with an eye in the palm of each hand, to both see the suffering and reach out. To both see the suffering and reach out. And she's always reaching out, like Toman turning in her sleep and putting a hand behind her head to find and adjust a pillow. Eyes aren't enough. Ears aren't enough. Thinking's not enough. What about the color of the pillow? Other features? They're irrelevant when we're in the dark. They're irrelevant. We only reach with our felt sense. Because it's dark, we can settle into our felt sense, into our heart mind. We can release the tension within the ego operating system and just settle in without evaluating the pillow or judging it, just settle in. Avalokiteshvara embraces everything, everyone, not knowing whether she's going to be effective at supporting or connecting. Body, eyes, hands, not separate, not split by different thoughts about is she a good enough helper? Or how long will it take for these people to really get better? Just extending. Because the measuring, judging mind has fallen into the heart. It just falls into the heart. So the ego operating system is continuously in motion, trying to find security and love. But it only needs to be completely still for a moment and drops naturally. But I don't want to diss the ego operating system. We all need an ego operating system. It's important to living from heart mind, to take care of it, And as a Western psychologist, I was trained specifically to work with the ego operating system. Classical point of view about the ego operating system is that it's made up of three components. And of course, you can do this any way you want, but this is the classical Western point of view. Western point of view. Made up of three components. Two from the past that we project, that we carry in our body and project in the future, into the future, and one in the present. The two from the past are the internal child and the internal parent. So let's start with the parent. The parent, we carry within us, within this Dharma container, attitudes, feelings, behaviors that are, in a way, like our parents would have responded, saying in a way what they would have said, feeling what they would have felt, behaving how they would have behaved. And there's a nurturing parent. Sometimes your parents were nurturing. You may think your parents were never nurturing. Sometimes they were. Or some adult in your life was. Some adult in your life was, or you wouldn't be here doing this. Nurturing parent, caring, loving, helping. Controlling parent, criticizing, reprimanding, censoring, punishing, what I used to call the inner critic until I started working with so many people in Zazen, and I changed it to the inner tyrant because it seems stronger than a critic for so many people. So that's from the past. We carry these projections in our bodies and these voices. And the child, the natural child. The spontaneous child, curious, creative, open, loving. And then the freaked out child, guilty, afraid, depressed, anxious, envious, trying to please everyone, all those big people, got to please them all so they won't be ignored, so they won't do something to me. So that's the parent and the adult. And then we have, the parent and the child. Then we have the adult. The adult. Adult is present-oriented. Adult thinks and acts based on what's happening right now. We show our adult when we're hanging out with colleagues at work, coffee hour at Zen Center, just being present, straightforward, without a lot of emotional triggers. And when the adult ego state is working well, our interactions are fueled by interest and curiosity. There's no interference from the punitive parent who blames, criticizes, or proves a point. When you're having coffee with someone at coffee hour who's blaming, criticizing, or proving a point, you don't want to have coffee with them anymore. You want to figure out how to move on to someone else, right? Or the scared child. Inadequate, unworthy, I'm not good enough. And the adult manages and attends to the parent and child and helps and so that they, in unison, Walt Whitman's, I am large, I contain multitudes, they, in unison, move toward goals. So during my last 20 years and more, supporting people with their meditation, I spent a lot of time, a good time, wonderful time, helping people with their inner timer and their freaked out child. Because as we accept them, as we listen to them without being caught by them, we have compassion. Avalokiteshvara's compassion comes up. We create an environment where the mind naturally begins to drop into the heart. As the ego operating system balances, it cools. And then when we reach out to someone in pain, we're able to embrace them, warts and all. So when I picked up my teacher to take him to the art lecture, he had a big warm smile. Going to the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco, best art, best Asian art in the United States. Now I think Mia has the best, but those days, DeYoung. Then he said, where's Rhonda? I explained she wasn't coming. She wasn't feeling good. I didn't say anything about depression. And he was quiet during the car ride. Then when it's time, as soon as we sat down, we got our seats, he got up and left. And then after the talk was over and he came in from the gift shop, he showed us his card and he was beaming. His smile covered his entire face as well as his hands and eyes. So the Zen Peacemaker Order, which someone has given a talk about in a Dharma talk fairly recently, not me, talks about three components of Avalokiteshvara's compassion, of our own compassion: not knowing, bearing witness, and loving action. So not knowing. Ego operating system, even when it's functioning well, needs to know. It just needs to know. But when we sink into heart mind, we're spontaneous, natural, and we don't mind not knowing. Having our pillow in the dark is really cool because we just reach for it. It's really cool. We don't have to think about it. We just do it. So when I first met my teacher, I told him that I'd been depressed before I came to Zen Center. He said, "Depression? What that?" "What that?" he said. I thought, "Oh, what that? What that?" I don't know if I told him or not. I must have said something. That's why I didn't tell him that Rhonda was depressed, because he'd just say, "What that?" Because he knew how to settle into not knowing, letting go of all we think we know, including the idea that we're separate, and just responding, just reaching for your pillow in the dark. Not knowing, a second component of the Zen peacemaking order, compassion, bearing witness. When the ego operating system balances and cools down, heart mind is there. Even in a topsy-turvy world, heart mind doesn't get thrown off because it's just here. So I've talked many times before about my friend Patrick, who first took me to see a homeless camp when I was a mental health professional. And my friend Prakik had been practicing meditation for about as many years as I had. And he said to me before we went, "If you completely focus on being with them," this is what I remember him saying, I didn't write it down, "listening to them, paying attention to them with no hint of judgment or advice, folks in the camp will begin to trust you." His mind had fallen into his heart. Most people who are in pain don't want or need to be fixed. Did you ever notice that? Someone, when you're in pain, I'm talking about psychological pain, someone wants to fix you. They don't want us to look away. They don't want us to sink into despair about their situation or condition. All they want is our undiluted presence. That's all they want, our undiluted presence. Pretty simple. Pretty simple. All they want is for us to hold our intimate space open, refusing to close our eyes, turn away, or use some psychological mechanism to protect and distance ourselves. That's the gift that they're looking for. Yeah. Deep, deep listening. Deep, deep listening. The third component of the Zen peacemakers is acting with loving kindness. So the metaphor we have for that, we have several metaphors, but the very common one is the creation of the universe in Buddhism. The creation of the universe is Indra. The god Indra creates the universe by throwing out an immense net of jewels, which becomes the universe, in which each individual jewel is completely itself and yet reflects all others. Completely itself and yet reflects all others. When the mind drops into the heart, we see and feel others' pain as a precious jewel that's been overlooked. We just reach out to it. We just reach out to it. Without feeling responsible for their suffering, without feeling like we have to take care of it to feel whole, because everything is already whole. Each jewel is whole. It may be a flawed jewel. All of our jewels are flawed, but that doesn't mean they don't reflect all the other jewels within them. Reaching out for a pillow in the dark. So here's a poem by Esau about a fly. Maybe compassion even for a fly. Maybe you swat it after you have compassion for it. Well, that's, if you swat it, you just flot it. But the compassion. Here's Esau. Hey, don't swat. The fly wrings his hands on bended knees. Hey, don't swat. The fly wrings his hands on bended knees. The mind drops into the heart. We have a sense of camaraderie with the suffering of the fly, with our own anxiety, with our guilt about how privileged we are, how privileged I am as a white person. Just holding that. Just holding that. Avalokiteshvara always showing us how to find our own pillow and help others do the same. Letting go of all those ifs, ands, and buts. How many ifs, ands, and buts did you do already today? When you drop into heart mind, you let go of those into the moment and its felt sense. So we're moving in our practice. We're moving in our practice from the interdependent net as a good idea to a description of who we are, who you are, what is. Right. We're moving to that. Gradually letting the mind descend into the heart, its true home. When we don't do this, Song San, who wrote the long treatise on trust in heart mind, which I've given many talks on, says, heaven and earth are torn apart. But when we open to heart mind, we heal. Healing comes out of that. And as I said, it doesn't mean that Dawu was better than Yunyuan, just that Yunyuan's mind at that moment wasn't fully descended, and Dawu's was. Dawu's was. Yunyuan and Dawu had balanced ego operating systems. We just assume that. We assume that after someone goes through all this practice of getting ordained as a priest and then all the years, that through their meditation and through their help from the teacher, their egoist operating system gets pretty balanced. It's never perfectly balanced, but it gets pretty balanced. When the needy child is listened to and attended to, when the spontaneous child is appreciated and acted from, and when the inner tyrant is detached from, I've got to see the inner tyrant first. Got to see it, got to feel it, just to know it's just stuff from the past that got lodged in your psyche. See it. Notice the good features of the parent. Live them out. So we practice. We practice it here at Minnesota Zen Center. We practice. Whether you're psychologically oriented or not, you practice supporting the needy child, detaching from the inner critic, and doing your meditation so that gradually we descend. But we have to take care of our ego operating system, or our mind will take off in 1,000 directions, in case you haven't noticed that. I have to pay attention to my wounded child, little Tim, and tyrannical parent, which I know who I inherited that from. I won't get into that this morning, but it's really clear. I have to notice any imbalance. Get support internally, externally, do my meditation, sink back down into my true home, into our true home, right here. It's really a little lower, but I'm going right here so you can see me. Of course, it's spatially everywhere. So our mind drops into the heart. Each of us is a separate. Each of us is our own flawed jewel, and yet we contain all the others. So naturally, we're compassionate to them because they're contained within us, our heart mind, continually unique, completely unique, totally unique, and yet not separate from you guys, not separate from you guys. So that's what I wanted to say this morning.